Journeys on Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com and podcast with WolfSpiritRadio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
A very good evening and good afternoon to everybody around this beautiful blue-green bauble spinning silently in space. We are joined together on the... We are joined together here today. It's the 27th of January, 2014. Tonight's guest is, once again, Nancy Hopkins. And we're going to be continuing... The journey, it's a long journey, and it's fascinating, the stories on the way. So, without further ado, good evening, Nancy, how are you?
Doing good, Jay, and you're doing good tonight, I hope?
Oh, yes. It's been, last night was an awesome shows. But there were several shows that were all awesome in their own right, and, it was all spontaneous, and it just happened, and, you know. So this weekend's one of those kind of open weekends where I don't have, like, specific guests, and then I sent a message to you, and you weren't there, and then everybody else was like, I couldn't keep awake, and I'm really ill, and blah, 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 blah. So, and it was like, oh, right, okay, it's one of those days when I have to speak on my own. And, you know, I always feel a bit shy about that, you know, just... talking on my own with nothing, so I just kind of just sat there and I took a deep breath in and then see what happens when it on the out breath. So there we go. That's what happened, and it was a really great show. People, two people called in, and we got into some really in depth stuff. I think a lot of it was very useful in dealing with emotional material. So,
are you putting pressure on me, Jay? Performing tonight, eh?
That's the thing. It's not a performance. It's all natural expression of the soul, and you know it's going to come out. You're there. You know you're in that zone anyway.
It just goes to show. I mean, more and more times in a given day, you find more and more of this opening. I mean, people really are becoming aware of so much more, and it allows you and I, who have been at it for a while, to go places where we didn't intend to go or know that we could go at this moment in time. But everything is moving.
Yeah, so it's bringing us all. It's that word that David Wilcock talked about a couple of years ago: convergence. Things are converging. Somebody posted the. One of my Facebook friends posted status as, I love numbers, you know, like I just pointed out, I just typed in 1.618, you know, and she was like, what? It's like the Fibonacci sequence, the golden ratio, the great mean, the golden mean, you know, everything is this thing all over nature and all this stuff and spirals and shit. And, so she was very, you know, it's kind of taken sideways and upwards by it. He didn't expect that.
Well, that's interesting, because earlier today I was looking at some information on the pyramids, and they were talking about the golden mean, and you know the concept that the pyramid is a reflection of the golden mean and is designed to reflect exactly what the human being is. I mean, everything about us is based on the golden mean, and what people. I mean, I assume most of your audience knows, but the golden mean, if you look at your finger, you're going to see three joints, the first one, the second one, and the third. That's a relationship of, 5, 3, and 2? It's a relationship that you see all through nature. Your arms are the same way. Your height versus aspects of your arms and legs are the same way. It's a pretty amazing situation. And then you mention it too, so it seems to be a theme. Maybe if we really truly come to some understanding of what that all means, maybe that's the answers to so much more. But it does seem to be a theme.
Yes, indeed, because it's like, you know, we've been talking, you know, we're talking about like living in cubes is like no good for us, and it's the thing that's wrong with the world and all of that stuff. One of the things that architects know, that is one of the secret Masonic architect secrets, is the golden mean. And that if you have rooms that are, that have your walls, say, in... All right, so let's talk about the golden mean. Let's just lay it out. What is the golden mean? Is this beautiful ratio, and it starts off with the thing that they call the Fibonacci sequence, and you probably did it when you were a kid. I think most, you know, this is a natural thing that you do, even if you did it with pen and paper and numbers, or you did it with blocks and you know, beans or whatever. But if you take, you start off with one, and then you start off with another one, and you add the two together. And then you take the last one, and you add those last two together, and so on. So you eventually get to this sequence, and the sequence goes 1, 1, 2, 3, which is 2 and 1, 5, which is 3 and 2, 8, which is 3 and 5, 13, which is 5 and 3, etc. And on it goes. And what's beautiful about this is if you were to kind of graph that, you would see this a very gentle curve, you know, a typical exponential curve. It would be a very graceful curve, and you would find that this would be a curve that you would find in nature. You can then take make little squares, you know, of one and two, one and one and two and five, you know, make the squares of those, and then you can join them together, and they also come out as a spiral, and they call that the spinning squares. And then, for instance, if you take 55 and 89, which is like further down the road, you know, it's just a few things down the road, you will find that the credit card is actually, it's 55 and 88, because it's not exactly, they always put a little twist in it, but that is the exact shape of the credit card. It's called the golden ratio, because if you have a rectangle that is that shape, people will choose that shape over all other shapes. It's a bit like the
wide... Well, probably because it's the natural, because if you take the spiral concept and you break it down into the concept of geometry being the triangle, then you've got the 3, 4, 5 golden section, which is that, if you take that and you flip it over and you connect it, then you've got your credit card. I think if I'm following what you just said, because again the 3, 4, 5 section, golden section, is what's prevalent everywhere. So you would go for what was the most natural geometric form, even though you don't do it consciously. It's just built into your DNA.
Well, it relates to your body. For instance, if you were to crook your finger, you know, so that you'll see the first section of your finger at right angles with the second section of your finger. You can do that, like, and then you hold that up against a rectangle, you'll see that that fits in there. That's what the golden ratio is. You see what I'm saying? If you bend your index finger and you look at the first joint and the second joint, and you make them at right angles to each other, that creates a golden section. That's one of the reasons it's so pleasing.
Yeah, you're right. Huh. Okay.
Yeah? So it's natural. Yep. And if it's natural, it feels natural. We feel at home, and that's why it's pleasing.
Yep. Interesting.
You're good.
But, again, I was just commenting on the fact that you were talking about it and that I had been looking at it. It seems to be, anytime you start getting a theme like that, you go, okay, so there's some kind of a message coming.
Flavor of the day. Well, here's the thing. About 20-odd years ago now, I was asked to build some pyramids. And the original pyramids that I was made to, you know, I was taking over a series of pyramids, you know, somebody else had left and I was taking over. So I decided to, you know, check them all the way through, you know, just get all the geometry exactly right. And so I did a lot of research on exactly how to get the exact angles of the Great Pyramid and how it all works and everything. And once I got it, it was it turns out to be I used the Fibonacci sequence, the golden ratio, and the Pythagoras theorem in order to get the exact sides of the triangle. And you know, eventually, once it gets down to it, if you're using pipes, if you're using like rods and pipes or whatever, the base and the side arms so the side arms are 96% of the length of the base. That's all, you know. once you do all the geometry, that's about right. You know, 96% will get you. I can give you the exact number, but it's like 95.83, you know. So. But, you know, as far as most measurements are concerned, you can make 96%. That'll do it. That'll, you know, get you a Cheops. And that's about, you know, that's about the accuracy that you need to make a 6 foot one. Obviously, you're going to need a lot more if you're going bigger than 6 feet. But so I did all of that. So it was all related to using geometry and geometric mathematics, geometric arithmetic. In order to get the special ratios. But the other thing that we found is that there are certain sizes that are conducive, and there it's like aerials. So if you have something that has a rod that is 9 inches long, for instance, that's related. That's 1/100th the size, no, 1/1000th the size of the Great Pyramid. If you have it 7 feet 6, that's 90 inches, which is 1/100th the size. So there are certain sizes of things that work nicely within the harmonic ratio of this gold, this sacred geometry. And it's like, and there is old fashioned, it's inches, it's 3 inches, it's 4.5 inches, it's 9 inches, it's 6 inches. Those are the kind of measurements that you get when you're making these small geometric forms, where it's just right, where you feel it's just right, where obviously the frequency is working just right, because size is frequency.
Well, when we got into doing the energy work during the 1990s, we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't have the mathematical background to be able to, you know, figure it out like you did. We were working strictly by feel. You know, if it felt like it was if it was right, we felt it. If it wasn't, we felt it. You know, and we adjust until it felt right. We were using our bodies to tune the various energy devices that we were constructing. And I thought, you know, looking back at it, when I was reading this this paper, it's a book. It's a 197-page book on pyramids that's done by a Russian who is a lot of information in that book, probably more than I want, but his name is Valery Uvarov, and he is so well known in the field of pyramids in Russia that he's the one whose designs they used in constructing the huge one that they've got outside of Moscow. I can't remember exactly. I think there's like 12 or something of them that this very rich Russian is building. They're being built out of fiberglass.
They're the very pointy ones, aren't they?
Yes, yes. And for some reason, they went with this particular design, but they're getting astounding results, and they're, you know, because they've got so much monitoring now, Like, for instance, they know that they could, they took a radar and they could actually plot out the energy beam that was coming off the apex going up, on the one outside of Moscow. And I suppose others, but that's the study I was reading. And, you know, when we were doing it, like I say, we were simply feeling it. So the human body was being used as the, yeah, that feels right. And we, one of the things that was very, became, we, it was like we were following, you know, voices in our heads, and I think that the people that actually constructed all the pyramids all over the world, I think they probably had some kind of blueprints. I don't think they were listening to things in their heads, but the effect of just following these kind of like little, let's try this and let's try that, was that we ended up stumbling into a lot of science just because we were observing it and playing with it. And one of the things that became, you couldn't deny it was just there, was that the energy, everything was based on energy, and that energy could be tuned. We had this, it had a pyramid on a circle, and the circle was on legs, it was raised, there was a structure underneath it, there was copper wire that they had us put on the ground, and they put glass blocks on top of it. We had geometric forms built under the ground, and then right under the apex of the pyramid, which we had another geometric form. But we noticed that if we had one pole that connected everything, and we had I took a small diameter copper tube and wrapped it around a horn of a I guess it was an elk, I'm not sure what it was, but it was a horn, which has got the spiral, it's got the golden,
yeah, it's got
the
golden ratio in it, yeah.
Exactly. And then when we took this horn in copper, and we put it, so attached it, we actually, it slid up and down this one copper pipe that was connected to everything. And when we did this, we could actually tune the energy field that we were sitting in. And so what we would do is we would wait until how many people got there or whatever, because we noticed that depending on the people that were involved in anything, the tuning, you had to tune it. And that's how we would do it. Everybody in, okay, good, you know. And then we just kept, you know, altering it until everybody went, yeah, that feels right.
What did you do with the coil? How did you tune it? What is a different position?
It was just the coil, which is like a coil made in the shape of a horn, was then put so that a pipe, a copper pipe that was, I think it was probably a 1-inch pipe, that was in the ground and attached to the poles that, or the circle that attached the pyramid and everything else, and then was wired into other areas of this whatever we
oh ground made. So you'd call that a grounding rod?
Well, yeah, I would think it was more, yeah, it was more of a grounding rod than anything else. But the spiral was the rod was right, the spiral moved up and down on the rod. At the top of it, it was tight enough that it was holding onto the rod, so you just basically pushed it up or down.
Ah, I see. Okay.
And that, just that tiny little spiraling thing, uh-huh, to tune the energy in the pyramid system that we were using. And I mean, it was like, you know, you'd have 20 people in there. And 20 people would say, okay, that feels right. And when everybody said it felt right, so everybody's feeling something. You know, it wasn't just, you know, let's put it here tonight. It was, you know, what are you feeling? Okay, that's where you want it? Okay, here we go. So the concept of enhancing a human being's ability to increase their own frequencies is definitely enhanced in pyramids and other energy things, but it's like we're all energy. So and it comes down to that concept of the resonance. If you twang a string in the piano, like middle C, all the other middle C's are going to start to vibrate. You may not be able to hear them at the audible of the human ear, but you can see them And so when we increase our energies to a higher level, the people around us are going to start resonating in tune with us. And that's why it's not going to take too many people doing really intense, knowledgeable, knowing what they're doing, increasing their energy fields, to make changes. You know, it's just, and I think that's what's happening, and I think it's happening very fast, much faster than a lot of people are aware of.
Well, I think it's, again, following the same curve as the Fibonacci sequence. You know, it's a sort of exponentially increasing number.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's the curve of the side of the horn, you see. It's
yeah.
That same curve. So this is interesting. So looking, and of course that's the same angle and curve as DNA.
Yes. Except and quartz crystal.
And quartz crystal and yeah. Oh yeah. The interesting thing about quartz crystal and pyramids is that the angle of the tip of the quartz crystal is the same angle as the Great Pyramid. So that's like the natural recognition. So you can take a little pyramid and you can plop it down on the end of a natural quartz crystal. It will just fit perfectly.
Yeah, that's true. I was, just as you were talking about it, I was reading this Russian studies that they were doing, and they were talking about how the reason that the bigger, heavier, Great Pyramid type things were so powerful was that the rocks that they were using had so much quartz in it, and that the weight of the structure was causing a lot of piezoelectric activity within the pyramid itself, and that on certain days when the cosmos was causing the Earth to put out more energy, that these pyramids would actually intensify, and that those were the times when the priests and the pharaohs would go like inside the Great Pyramid, and they would be able to communicate with, well, you know, who knows who's on the other side of that kind of communication, because they obviously were built at the direction of or through the actual manipulation of material world by 3D ET people.
Well,
I mean, there's no way.
Yeah, I was talking with Sean on Friday about precisely this aspect of the Great Pyramid, of the King's Chamber being a place where the interdimensional portal was operating, and it was the Ark of the Covenant was the thing that was the portal that generated the Ark. The arc is the spark, is the plasma arc that is the interdimensional black hole, wormhole producing thing that the priests would dive in through and then be schlepped out and all of that stuff. It would generate a vortex, but it would also generate a lot of ultraviolet light, and that great big, well, you know, it appears to be like you have to crawl underneath it. But it's to stop the huge amount of ultraviolet light getting out, but still being able to hear what's going on. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I think that at the time that they were using that, before it was stolen and taken by Moses, that there was probably a link up, and probably they could teleport. It was a Stargate, I'm sure.
In the old days it was a Stargate, but it was also... If you know that where it is on the planet is right in the dead center of the whole planetary landmass. Yeah,
yes.
So it's the central point. So if you have a dome that extends out from there, it would cover all of the landmass of the planet, wouldn't it? So
yes.
It used to be the central point of a protective dome system.
Well, what this was so interesting when I was looking at this stuff with this Russian, because he was talking about, and I don't know where he's getting his information. I mean, he does a lot of referencing. There's a lot of referencing throughout this book, But he was talking in terms of the different pyramids around the world. And he basically said that the ETs directed these pyramids, but that once that they were all, because we've got much more than the 64, but 64 of the pyramids were chosen, and the distance between each of those pyramids is 5,000 kilometers. And that the Giza Plateau, the Great Pyramid, was north, south, east, west, but also based upon that. You know, we naturally assume that that's because of the, you know, the north, south, east, west. But there's more to it, because when they're positioned in that positioning, they were able to act as, they were able to be focused towards two points. Let me look this one up. One of them is the Kailas reflector in Tibet. Are you familiar with that one?
Mount Kailas.
Huh?
Sometimes they call it Kailash, or Kailas.
Kailas, I don't know. It could be your pronunciation, but it's that mountain in Tibet that's been, the surface of it has been, you know, machined off somehow, probably lasered off in order to be reflective. You know what? Which one I'm talking about?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that had been terraformed. No.
Yeah, it's very interesting. There's pictures. As a matter of fact, tomorrow I'll stick up on my Facebook, you know, the pictures of this particular one. But then they have the Pyramid of Meru, which is, I'm not exactly, I mean, he goes through where it is and all this stuff, but it was a little bit too much, and I kind of went over this area, but it's another huge pyramid that was very critical in maintaining this communications system initially, you know, so that the whoever the ETs are, you can decide who you want to bet on, but they were able to communicate directly with the human population by having communication directly with the leadership, and also because they could beam out healing energy from these pyramids. That they could kind of control the population by making them feel good.
So that's like the bliss in V.
Yeah, right. Exactly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I also found interesting, he makes a connection between the asteroid that apparently hit. Something happened at Earth at about 13,659 years ago. And it did. Well, initially, what I heard was that it hit Canada. It landed in Canada, causing all sorts of havoc all over the world. And there's a whole study done on the Chesapeake Bay area, and they can see down at that time frame that there's a tremendous amount of soot that was deposited on the Earth, probably enough to kill most of the population. And that's when you've got a movement of the Clovis people, the American Indians that were there at the time, to the west and south. And so, I mean, I was well aware of this particular seeming event, but this guy goes into a whole different discussion about it. And he says that the original ETs that were in control of the planet set up different at different places systems that were weapon systems that would destroy any incoming asteroid or whatever was incoming. But this sucker was so big, this piece was so big, that when they hit it, they didn't have enough power over Canada to actually destroy it. And what happened is it kind of started doing this bouncing thing, because they kept hitting it with weapon systems, and they'd hit it and it would change its direction a little bit, but then it'd start coming down again. They'd hit it again and hit it again. And in the end, everything that these ETs had built was destroyed. Except this guy claims that the structure that they have up in Siberia is still working. And, you know, he's discussing this thing, and he lists all of the times that it came on and protected basically that part of the planet from incoming stuff. And, you know, it just, it's a very interesting take on what was happening back then. And again, like I say, the guy is really well known, very, very well respected, and his work on the pyramids, I know enough about the pyramids to understand that, yeah, he's just talking what a lot of us know if you study it for a while. But he goes into that wild story about, you know, I've heard of the weapon system before, and I've heard that it was operational.
It's what fans of the Stargate series would call the Ancients.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The Ancients, and I think it might be that's who the Nazis were searching for as well. The Übermensch, what do they call them? You know, the Aryans. That's right. The original.
Yeah. Well, they thought, I was watching something a couple nights ago. They thought, or the story that they were telling, was that the Aryans were giants, and that they were the first ones on the planet, and that the planet really belonged to them, and something had gone amiss, and that's why the Nazis had to clean it all up. But yeah, they went to Tibet in search of you know, any information on this Aryan race, but of course the Tibetans didn't know a thing. It's all kind of a crazy story of that. You know, there's not enough information for anybody to think that if they really believed this, that they either had information nobody else has ever had, or they were totally loony.
Well, ancient people seem to do bizarre things until you understand the environment where they were.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And the way they might describe something is according to the technology of the day. You know, so all Ezekiel would say was wheels within wheels, you know. All right, okay. Counter-rotation, we call it these days.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Sort of stuff. So, you know, these sort of things have been around for a long time. Age of pyramids. I feel that certainly this, you know, it's old, really, really old, older than like the destruction of Atlantis by a long chalk, older than apparently not as old as the Sphinx is, though, eh?
Yeah, the Sphinx. Well, all of those monuments have been vastly underestimated as to their age. I mean, I used to laugh when they tell me, oh, the pyramid was X amount of years old. I'm going like, how do you know that? Because the pyramid itself would change your ability to determine age because of the energies that are there. You know, you couldn't possibly do a carbon test on a pyramid and expect to get anything that made any sense, because the pyramid itself, we know the energies do astounding things. They keep cells alive. They keep seeds alive and make them better. They increase the potency of all sorts of medicine, you know, by very large measurable degrees. So there's energies and things that are happening there. So how could you possibly, based on any normal 3D reasoning, you know, be able to determine the age of the pyramids?
Oh, here's the name for them that he's given. I've posted a link into the chat rooms on Wolf Spirit and Revolution Radio. From wandsofhorrors.com is an article by Uvarov describing a lot of what you're talking about, and is talking about the defense complex constructed on the earth by the Neferu. The moment that
he calls them the Neferu. I mean, that's his term.
Yeah, so that's N-E-F-E-R-U, which sounds like Nibiru and stuff, but the moment the gigantic fragment entered the dense layers of the atmosphere, the complex struck the asteroid powerful deflecting blows as it flew over Alaska and Siberia, with the aim of changing its direct with the aim of changing its trajectory and ejecting it back into space. But the mass of the asteroid, compounded by its speed and angle of entry, proved critical. The counterblows only slightly modified its trajectory, and with its angle of descent altered, it continued on its path. Alaska, the first strike, at least the East Siberian Sea, across the mouth of the Ob, over northern Europe, southern Britain, finally falling in the region of the Azores, where a third attempt at deflection was made. Oh, this, this sounds like a real cluster. Everything which took place in those brief minutes that put an end to a long and highly promising period in humanity's history resembled something desperately attempting to stand up for the life not only of the Earth but also of a civilization that could not have imagined how stunning and terrifying the last day of this doomed era would be. Oh, well, it's very Russian. They're very emotional when they write. It's like Sorchevo. Yeah. Colossal release of energy brought the temperatures down to minus 70 degrees, which instantaneously killed off all life across all expanses of Alaska and Siberia, as it is up until today. And I suppose now is the day, you know, we're kind of, I suppose, it's rather than an ice age, it's like we're in a big thaw, aren't we?
Well, it's interesting because he goes on in the article, because that comes right out of the book. He goes on further, and he's talking about a 12-year cycle. And again, it was a lot of information, and I only got the gist of it, which is that there's a 12-year cycle, and that he goes back in history, and he talks about when this bad time would come, and the low pitch of the 12, you know, the bad stuff. And sure enough, everything he was saying, it made me think of the Mayans, even though they've got a different count. But he said that somewhere around 2013 to 2014, this low point was going to happen again, and that it was very likely that the sun would start to put out a lot of energy. And then he keeps talking about this other Earth, the Earth that's on the other side of the sun, so we can hardly ever see it, although it's been seen through history. It's on the same orbit as Earth, and so it's like following us through eternity, and we don't see it because the sun's always between us and it. But that when the sun gets erratic, this other planet that seems to be smaller, I think, is more affected by changes in the sun, and its orbit will become slightly out of phase, and it's been sighted. And so he was predicting that somewhere around now that this the second Earth would be seen. And then he gets into talking about Phobos, the Russian spacecraft that went up to Mars and was turned around to take pictures of the sun. And so they turned it around, and they were about to take the pictures of the sun, which he believes that where it was in relationship to the Earth and the sun, that it would second Earth, and that that's why it all of a sudden just stopped working. So, you know, and of course this was written, I think, in 2009. So, well, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, somebody sees the second Earth.
Wow, interesting. The esotericists in esoteric astrology say that there is a planet on the other side of the solar system that is cloaked by the sun, and that it's called Vulcan. And who knows whether the Vulcans of Star Trek are actually from this solar system.
He didn't name it, but he said that the Sumerian writings said that Neferu, that they came from the 12th planet. And at that time, there was no 12th planet. They didn't, you know, I mean, you know, but that's what, I mean, we wouldn't have known there was a 12th planet. So, you know, it's indicating that there was a planet that nobody was seeing from Earth in the Sumerian writings. So I don't know. It's just fascinating. I mean, because I remember seeing some stuff on YouTube of really strange pictures that it does look like there's another planet out there, you know? But I'm like, no. I don't believe everything that's on the internet. But maybe there is another planet out there.
Yeah, and
won't that make people? Of course, you know, getting the information to the people would be difficult. It's like, I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of the white sun.
But I've heard various.
Well, what happened?
Anyway, go on.
What happened was that as we got into the photon belt, which we're in now, there's a lot more dust and debris and radiation and all sorts of stuff that actually adds fuel to the sun. So the sun picking up fuel is actually going through a transitionary period, and it's going from a yellow sun to a white sun. Now, we were taught the opposite. But according to Daniel, who is came out, you know, and again, you have to make the determination, is the guy lying to you or not? But he told some very interesting and very telling information about chemtrails. And he also said that the scientists, you got layers of scientists that are either, you know, regular scientists that everybody knows by name, and then you got the gray area where, you know, they start to get into the dark, and then you got the totally dark scientists. Well, the gray ones, they see that the sun is going to get hotter, so they decide that they've got to use the atmosphere to protect us. So that's when they started the chemtrail program up, and they started dumping this stuff in, you know, like the aluminum to reflect the heat, and the barium stuff to reflect the radiation, and, you know, all this. It was all designed because the sun is going into a white sun. But that's fear. That's fear from people that don't really understand the whole science of it. So somewhere along the line, in the last few years, God only knows when, the sun actually started to look white. And I would go drive home every night staring right into the sun. And it wasn't until the road that I would take an interstate, it was... You go north, 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 and then you'd make a real intense 90-degree turn, and now you're going east. So when I make the turn, something starts reflecting in the side view mirror, and I'm going like, what the hell is that? And my mind now, which is programmed to only take in a little bit of here and a little bit of there and to make a judgment as to what it's seeing, because it takes in so much, if it is seeing a white sun, it's not being recorded correctly, because your mind is going to say the sun's not white, it's yellow. I'm going to push that aside. It's error. Something is in error here. So your mind keeps wanting to see what it thinks it should be seeing. But because my mind was fooled by seeing the reflection in the mirror, all of a sudden I went, oh my God, that's a sun, and it's a white sun.
That's right. It's a cognitive dissonance. It's what you're talking about.
Yes, exactly.
Because it's like looking at the Beatles and going, oh yeah, there's John, there's Ringo, there's George, and who's that? Oh, that must be Paul. Oh, it's Paul. Don't be silly.
Right.
You know, whereas, you know, there is a cognitive dissonance there because he's not Paul. Anyway, but again, we're told that our sun is yellow. We have a yellow sun. Except when you look at it, it's white. I was looking at, yes. I was doing some sun gazing this morning, just because the sun shines in my window. Karen Quintostado, who's been a guest on my show once or twice before, has sent me this beautiful little crystal bauble thing, glass crystal cup sphere thing. It's got loads of faces and facets and rainbow. So when the sun shines in on it, the whole room explodes in rainbow dots all over the walls. It's fantastic. And so this room gets the dawn sun, and as the dawn came up this morning, I was just kind of looking at the sun as well. It was actually, it appeared to me to be square, because it was kind of behind two clouds that had sharp edges, so it looked square to me. So I had this very square and, yes, very, very white sun.
Well, I worked for 25 years at a condominium, a maintenance engineer, which means basically I was there in case there was an emergency. But I saw over 5,000 different sunrises, and very often the sun would look square at sunrise, and I never could figure out why. But the thing about the white sun is that now, when you look at it, it's so bright, it hurts your eyes, you can't look at it. And I started watching, really concentrating on looking at any kind of a video or television or anything showing the sun, to really look at the sun and say, okay, is that yellow or is that white? When did it happen? And a couple nights ago I saw one, and it was the yellow sun. But any recent photography of the sun is all white. I mean, you don't even see yellow, you see white.
Yeah, and something Cliff High mentioned a couple of years ago, and what he was saying is that photographers had been mentioning to him that, you know, they've had to change their filtering. You know, if you can speak to a photographer who takes, like, wedding photos out in the day, in the sunlight, ask them, has anything changed in the last 30 years? They'll tell you.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a lot more ultraviolet light. But what's wrong with it? You see, this is the thing. You know, everybody's like, oh, ultraviolet light, yeah, that's what kills you. Yes, but also it's the same as what can heal you. Depends what frequency it is. That's
exactly the thing. There's nothing to be afraid of. This is what is. Hmm. And these energies are healing us. My new find, Dolores Cannon, was talking in terms of the aches and the pains and the blood pressure and the things are going wacky in your body. It's just that your body is adjusting to these new energies. And not to get all freaked out, because you go to the doctor and the doctor's going to tell you, I don't know what's happening because I don't see it. Because it happens, it fixes, okay, we're adjusted, and now it's gone. So by the time you get to the doctor, you don't have the same symptoms even. And you know that's what's all of this is good, and like what the gray scientists didn't anticipate, which I believe the black scientists would have been well aware of, is that everything is based on geometry. So if the sun gets bigger, then Earth is going to get bigger, but the ratio between them is going to stay the same. In other words, we're going to get is technically farther away, but the ratio of the distance between us and the sun is going to stay the same. So we're not going to get hurt. If it gets bigger, we get bigger. And that was another weird thing, Jay. Back in, it was probably 2011. It might have been earlier than that, that the reports were coming in, but I think that's when I saw them. There was three different Eskimo Inuit tribes that were talking about the change in where the sun and the moon were coming up or going down.
Yes.
That the whole, you know, and it was so funny because at that time I was very much into Richard Hoagland's Facebook. There was so much interesting information coming across his Facebook postings. But I tried to get people interested in this. And nobody, I mean, I continually, isn't anybody care about this? You know, the people on the ground that look at these things, that travel and use them for guidance, are getting lost because they're wrong. You know, what is this?
Yep.
And nobody has said a thing, not even Richard. And
I did.
Did you?
I'm up here. I'm in 57 degrees north here.
Oh, right. So you would have seen it.
So there have been times when I've noticed, and I watch the sun, you know, I'm up so late that I see the sunrise. And I see where it rises every day, because like it would shine in my window on a particular angle, on a particular ornament or something like that. So I can tell, that's how I can tell whether the things are normal. Because I'm waiting one day, because I got a feeling that one day it'll be different. According to Sean David Morton, his future self said that it would happen in 2027, which is only like 17 years away.
Right.
And that the Earth basically is rolling and rocking as well as spinning.
Well, what I thought about when I was trying to figure it out, because like I say, I didn't know you at the time, obviously. Nobody else was even talking about this. I mean, the television people were interviewing the Eskimos, Inuits, to and finding this information out. But, you know, you couldn't get anything from the local scientific groups at all. And so I started thinking about it. I said, okay, what could possibly have happened that is making this change? And the only thing that made sense to me was if the Earth had gotten bigger or smaller in relationship to the sun. You know, that there was a difference in sizing. If the Earth got bigger, then where the sun was coming up would be a different place. You know what I'm saying?
But not only that. All right, so I had this guest. His name was Gordon James Giannotto. He's spent about 6 shows with me. That's 12 hours. I don't expect anybody to listen to the marathon. It's there on my archive site. That's everbeyond.info. Basically, and also Nate, all of the shows that I've done with Nancy, that I've also produced Nancy with, so all of the stuff where Nancy's doing her stuff is also on my website, everbeyond.info, and you can get into the archive page, and it's all free and everything, so it's good. So, the whole idea about the Earth rocking, he's saying that there is a magnetic body that we cannot see, or there is some magnetic effect being played on the Earth, so that when the Earth, as it's rotating, is on the side where the Great Atlantic Rift is, which is like an overdose of iron, it's like a big iron zipper on the side of the planet, and when that comes round, as we're rotating, and it faces this thing, it's then drawn downwards, if you're looking face onto the Atlantic, the mid-Atlantic, you'd be below, and it would draw downwards towards you, and then it would right itself as it continues its spin, and the effect.
So, like something bobbing on the surface of water. A bobbing action.
Imagine that you had a magnet. And a helium balloon, and there's a magnet taped to the side of the helium balloon, right? So the balloon is kind of bobbing, you know, it's floating in the air, but you've got a magnet in your hand, and you walk past it, right? Now it's not enough to actually draw the magnet completely towards you, but it will have a slight influence on it. It would cause the magnet to pull the planet towards the magnet. I mean, you could be standing like 6 feet away from it, but there would still be that.
And nobody knows what this magnet is or where it is, or I mean, they could probably determine where it is if they've determined there's this bobbing effect.
That's probably why they've got all the infrared telescopes. You know, there's some sort of magnetic anomaly. Anyway, it's something I noticed last year. Because I can see that the sun will rise in the same place, except sometimes it didn't.
And interesting. From day to day, it could be rising in a different place.
Yeah, and it could be in a... it just seems that the Earth tilts. That's all. And the moon has as well. The moon's been tilting.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of magnetism and pull going on. As we're spinning around and swirling around in the wake of the swirling of the sun's vortex momentum, as it spins through space.
I would think that even like a small dwarf planet that you couldn't even see, or a dwarf star that you couldn't even see, could be having some kind of an effect like that.
Yeah,
it could be anything, but you know, I mean, it's very interesting.
Yeah, so we've got. I mean, here's the next thing, right? Okay, so we see our spectrum, you know, we see red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, right? However, that doesn't stop color existing on all other octaves, because all that is an octave, you know.
Correct.
For instance, our voices have a span of several octaves. And piano. Imagine a piano. A piano is an instrument that can reproduce just about everything that the human ear can hear. It's like the lowest note is close to the lowest note we hear as a frequency, and the highest note is close to the highest note that we can discern.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
You know, particularly, you know, like the sounds of nature, like the sounds of birds are up in there, and the sounds of like whales and bulls and things like that are down at the low end. So it's the piano sort of more or less expresses the spectrum of our sound world, and the beyond it is what we call ultrasonic, right? But it's still more octaves, and then if we raise that, we're getting into hundreds of kilo cycles, 100K cycles, I mean we stop hearing. Us old folk, we stop hearing about 9 kilohertz, you know, but teenagers can hear like 16 kilohertz and stuff like that, and you can actually buy apps for your mobile phone that can send out 16 kilohertz pulses that only teenagers can hear, so they can they got dispersal unit that sends out to stop teenagers from gathering on certain corners. They have these 16 kilohertz units that only they can hear. It's like the things that get rid of rats and mice.
I love it.
Same technology, basically. You know, that's how they care about our children. You know.
Oh my god.
So anyway, so when you've got the frequencies of these ultrasonics, and then it goes higher and higher and higher and higher. 27 kilohertz is a very interesting thing. That's about, now we're coming back to the pyramid. When the pyramid in Bosnia seemed to activate, you know, just like 2001 style, do you remember in 2001 when they're on the moon and they're looking at the great big monolith and suddenly scream and they put their ear up, their hands to their helmet as if they could cover their ears. It's great because they got spacesuits on you, obviously. Yeah. Anyway, 27 kilohertz, which obviously is completely ultrasonic to us, is the frequency of the energy beam that is coming out of the Bosnian pyramid. So
27 hertz, because the natural impulse of the Earth is 57.
57 varieties, 57 hertz, 57 varieties of aliens. Did Heinz have something to do with this? Don't go away, we've got more baked beans of knowledge. Welcome back to Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio, your 100% homegrown organic fertilizer used to grow this stuff. Are very happy to accept donations on any of the sites, everbeyond.info, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, or is it Freedom's Lips? And indeed, wolfspiritradio.com, the home of the Wolfpack at Dave Corso's place in Nevada. Anyway, so we are being simulcast at all these places, and we are also being simulcast on No Borders Radio, which doesn't require any funding at all, is completely commercial free and very anarchic. Anyway, sorry, it's great little station. So are we on it? Oh no, we're not on it tonight. Anyway, I'll shut up. Nancy Hopkins is my guest. We are talking about, we're talking about the pyramid, but we're also, it's all based on the golden ratio, 1.618, which is where I started with my my friend's Facebook update. So, taking it back to the planetary grid and the Earth shield put in there by the ancients, where else should we go, Nancy? We were talking about something, the force.
Well, we were talking about Bosnia and the sun pyramid and
yes,
the beam that comes off of it. Now, you said it was 27. What does that correspond to? I mean, we can't hear it or see it, right? I mean, it's out of our visual range too, right? And do they see something?
No, but if you take an electromagnetic field detector, I mean, basically a guitar, an electric guitar would do it. You just need something that will pick up any frequencies that are coming in. And attach them to a frequency counter that is, or an oscilloscope, and you'll see a frequency there, and you can measure it through the oscilloscope, you know, according to its range. That seems to be what they've done. You know, you just stick a pickup at the top of the pyramid and see what goes on. And apparently, they flew one over in an aeroplane, and they would keep picking up a signal that seemed to get stronger as the further they went up in the sky. So it may be the down in the middle of the pyramid, it's like a tiny little whisk that's producing a tiny little oscillation that grows and grows and grows, a bigger and bigger oscillation and vortex, until finally it gets to be an enormous vortex really high up, but you're just twisting, it's like twisting the end of the thread.
Did you see the photograph that was taken in I think mid-2012, of the tourists down in the Mayan looking at the temple and seeing actually taking a picture of a beam coming off it? Did you happen to see that?
Ah, yes, that lovely little spiral beam thing.
Yeah, that, you know, it was just a coincidence that they took the picture when they did and were able to capture it on film. And I don't... Well, I know Richard Hoaglander took electronic measurements up there that were sounding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you don't need much. You don't need really sort of, like I said, you don't need much heavy-duty equipment to measure this sort of stuff. You just need a frequency counter, which you can buy over the counter, or on eBay or somewhere, or, you know, what do you call it? What's that place? Radio Shack. That will count frequencies up to many megahertz, and you just put a coil of some kind, you know, like I say, you can use an electric guitar pickup or something out somewhere.
Right.
A loudspeaker coil or something, you know, anything. There's loads of things you can use as a pickup coil that will pick up these frequencies that are being emitted by things. You know, it's no magic. EMF is all around, and it's really easy to transform it, which is what Tesla's been talking about and all that stuff. You just got to get the right shape. Now, you were talking about the conical spiral shape of the aerial that you use to tune your pyramid.
Right.
And, you know, if you look at that and you imagine that you're looking at the end of a much larger spiral, that this is just like the end, like the handle on the end of it. And so you just need a very, very small amount of force to start this thing spinning by having a very small oscillation, rotation going on right at the end of that little fellow, that will twist an enormous vortex above it.
Yes, anytime I got a little motor that would rotate, you know, would just rotate, and I'd put a platform on it, and I would rotate different types of minerals and crystals inside a pyramid, and then just simply because you're feeling it, you could see that if you used a ruby versus an emerald, the energies were all different, but you could change the energies inside the pyramid through rotation. Let me. I've told you this story, but it's one of those things that if people haven't heard it, it's a great story.
Go ahead.
When we were doing that, the first thing with the structure that I had on the property was that I came home from work, and of course it was like 8:30 in the morning, and I get this: you got to build something. I'm going like, build what? You know, it's a voice in my head, and they tell me I got to build it with a scaffolding that was on the property. And the scaffolding is just that, you know, steel stuff that you build around things if you're going to work on construction and stuff. I don't know why it was in the yard, but there was a huge pile of it. So we ended up building this structure that I had no idea why am I building this? It took me 4 hours. I don't know what it is. And I was basically taking a section of scaffolding and bringing it over where I was led to believe I should build this thing. And then taking another one and tying it on, and then I made an angle to it. Don't know why I made the angle. Make the angle. Make another angle. Make another side. Another angle, angle, angle. And I got this thing, and I'm going like, okay, what is this? Well, then that night when I was, I picked up the book, The Keys of Enoch, which I had been reading, and I turned the page from where I'd stopped, and don't you know there's a diagram of exactly what I had built in the Keys of Enoch. And I'm like, oh my God, what is this thing? And they called it a Merkabah. So that's how we ended up calling this thing a Merkabah. And of course, a Merkabah is a wheel within a wheel, and it has a long, lot of story about that. But that's what the Keys of Enoch had called it, and I've got the same structure on my property now. So then we were led to...
So hang on a second, Nancy. Can you describe the form of that statue, of this...
Well, it was, think of scaffolding, and the scaffolding was about, I think they were in, were they 6 feet? Yeah, they were probably in 6 feet sections. They were about, I would say, 5 feet tall. And so, and I had all these things, and I just brought them together, so I had like three of them together. And then there was one that went at an angle, and at like a 45-degree angle, and then another 45-degree angle, and then there was another three panels. So it was very simplistic initially, but it was the exact same structure that is shown in the Keys of Enoch.
So is that what we'd call a star tetrahedron?
No, it would be more, it would look like a rectangle at, with the, both sides, instead of being perpendicular, they went out to points. So you got a rectangle and you got points at the end instead of being, flush, you know, being, perpendicular.
Points at the end.
Can you see it?
No, keep going. So, Is it shaped like a pyramid? Is it shaped like...
It's like the two ends are like a pyramid that are then connected by three strands of, so about 18 feet, they're connected. So you got two parallel 18 feet scaffolding that are probably 10 feet apart, and at the end, you've got these again, pieces of the scaffolding, yeah, that were, instead of being perpendicular to match up with the other side, the parallel side, mm-hmm, they were put at an angle, a 45-degree angle. So you've got like a, you know, points at the end of the
Oh, and they were instead of being like the roof of a barn, for instance,
like a barn was laying on its side,
like a barn roof laying on its side.
Right, on each side, yeah, each end. But above that, we put we took copper tubing and made a circle that we put on legs, and on top of that was the Egyptian style pyramid. So this and the circle was at about the 6 foot mark. So you had this upper thing. So we were really below the pyramid.
All right, so you created this structure that you kind of had jacked up 6 feet in the air.
Right.
And then exist underneath it. But the
Merkabah, the structure I first built, that was on the ground. That stayed. But then over this thing, we took four legs. So we had the four legs that were holding a... oh gosh, it had to have been a diameter of at least 20 foot circle of copper piping. And then on top of that was a full structured Egyptian pyramid that the poles being used were 10 footers. So the whole thing was like, when you're inside it, you're being surrounded by this structure of this scaffolding, but above you is a circle, and on top of that is a pyramid. So we were under the pyramid. We weren't inside it. We were under it.
So one of the interesting things that I found about sitting inside a pyramid is that it does feel like you're inside somewhere rather than being outside, even though there is like almost nothing to it. that there is a sense of you're inside something, and I believe that the thing that you're inside is the vortex that it creates.
Oh, absolutely. But what I discovered in doing all this work with smaller structures and things was that anytime you build a physical pyramid, there's a mirror effect of an energy pyramid below it.
That's right.
So by the structure being built the way it was, we were actually sitting within an energetic pyramid, the reflection of the one that was above us. So, and then on top of that, inside on the floor of this thing, which was ground, I mean, it's all open, it's not, you know, we're outside, but on the ground, they had us take copper wire and make this intricate, and I'm talking about, we used hundreds of feet of copper wire to do this intricate, circuitry that they then had us put, glass blocks on top of it so that you could lay on top of the circuitry. Then a friend of mine, Curtis, was making these amazing geometric forms that were standing probably about 18 inches were as tall as they were, but they were intricate forms. I mean, they were double pyramids. They were, you name it, he had all different types, but he brought two of them over to the house, and one of them we put up at the apex of the pyramid. And the second one, we dug a hole right underneath it, that we wired that copper structure into this copper circuitry that was on the ground. And, we put it in the ground and we covered it up. And all of a sudden I hear yelling. I mean, it was like somebody screaming in my head, run, run, run. And I just grabbed him and I said, run. And he doesn't question it, right? We just start running, but we get about 20 feet away, and we turned around. Now, we're still moving backwards. We stopped running. We're still moving backwards, but we're looking at the pyramid. And all of a sudden, I realized my cat Hugger was inside the Merkaba. She was asleep on one of the chairs in there. So I immediately started to run back, and all of a sudden, from the south, the direct south came at about the 3-foot mark, came a white beam of light that was probably, it was dense, you couldn't see through it. But it was probably about a foot tall. And it just was like, and it goes right by us. And when it got inside the pyramid, there wasn't any noise, but it gets right beside us. And when it got inside the pyramid, it like separated, and part of it went up and part of it went down. And then both of them were like ricocheted back, and they met in the middle, and there was this huge explosion of light. And, you know, I didn't have to go back any farther for the cat, because she comes running out of there, and she was 15 feet away when she went airborne, and the next thing I know, I got a cat with claws in my shoulders, but she spun around to look back at where she'd just been. So she obviously had encountered some weird thing happening. And my buddy there is saying a lot of four-letter words, and they all ended in, did you see that? Did you see that? Yeah, I saw that. What it was, I don't know. But it was the grid system that we traditionally know of as being on the surface of the planet actually has another grid system that's an octave of it, that resides at about the 3-foot mark above the surface. And that grid system was activated in July of 2012. And at the time that this strange thing happened with this beam of light, I didn't know about this upper grid system. But once I understood that, then I realized that this light system was actually running on that upper part of the grid. You know, into where, and you know where it came from, what they were doing. I don't know, but I know that that place was magical. We'd go in there, and it was like we had all sorts of musical instruments, and only one of us was a professional musician. But I have never heard the kind of music that I heard. People who had never played a flute would be playing a flute, Native American flutes, drumming that would just take you so far out of body that you couldn't believe it. And we were continually having, you would connect, you'd feel, you'd get, you felt like you would be connected to people on another planet who were doing the same kind of ceremony. And sometimes it was on this planet when there was a solstice or some big event that was a worldwide kind of thing. Sometimes when we would be doing this music and getting very, very high from the music and the energies, you would connect to somebody like the Tao Indians. For some reason, I used to often connect with them. But then again, I had a shaman. This property was so powerful, it would draw shamans to it. I had a Tao shaman that came to the property. I also had a local native shaman who was led to the property. So it's just a magical thing when you get totally dedicated to listening to your guides and building these amazing energy things.
Yeah, I've had an odd experience with the one thing that, I mean, it's generally they call it a Merkaba. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what the Merkaba is. Everybody's got a different meaning for it. Having built star tetrahedrons, here's the thing. All right, when was it? About 2002, 2003, I think. I woke up one morning and this thing was in my head. It was sitting in front of me, if I closed my eyes, I kept seeing this thing. And it's a tetrahedron with another tetrahedron interpenetrating. So, like, two triangle pyramids pointing towards each other and then kind of squished in towards each other. And it wouldn't go away whenever I closed my eyes. I kept seeing this, and it was like, okay, build me. And I was completely crazy. Until finally I kind of broke, and I said, like, okay, all right, I'll make you. And I thought, what have I got? I mean, I've got nothing to make you. So I found some pipe cleaners, these little furry chenille things. And I made this little model of the Merkaba. And it was like, oh, it's manifested itself. And then I made one from bamboo sticks, and then I made one from copper. And it was that was the favorite one. I'm making one from copper. I made a few from there. But they definitely like to manifest these little things through us. Anyway, so I've done these things before. Made pyramids before and spent so much time thinking about them that they manifest in mind stuff and kind of build themselves in your mind. It's a really interesting thing. It's because of you thinking about the form helps to create that form inside your mind, and that form by focusing on that form allows you to travel to other dimensions, because that form exists on other dimensions and is therefore a tuning fork, a key to get into them.
Yeah, it's very basic to the structure of the universe. That's it. If you play with it for any amount of time, you can't help feeling, that, okay, I mean, and it just... Oh, there's so many things you can do if you just give yourself the time to do it. But you're so correct about building things in your mind. The geometric structures that you can build in your mind are... It's a symbolism. It's not just the structure, but the symbolism of the structure attracts the energies that the structure is resonating with. And so if you build pyramids in your mind, or if you have, I mean, I've got pyramids, little teeny, any type of mineral that's ever been put into a shape of a pyramid, I swear I've got it in this house. I've got organ generators that are pyramids. They just change the energy, even the small ones. And I know that the Russians are saying that, you have to have certain, an exact certain percentage of the Great Pyramid when you're building these things, and they should be built of this, and they glass mostly, but my experience with this stuff is that it's your intention. When you start messing with this stuff and you start to see these forms in your head, Just by using bamboo or copper seems to be, you know, the best. Well, it used to be affordable. But when you actually just make the structure of these things, it's like, it may not be the perfect, thing, the perfect creation, but it works. And so, and nobody should be afraid. I mean, go out into your yard and build yourself a little pyramid. There's directions all over the internet. And just start experiencing with it, because the energies are getting so much more intense that they're going to be that much more feelable. You're going to be able to feel them that much sooner.
Totally. And if anybody wants to build their own system, then get in touch with Nancy or myself, and I can give you instructions to make a copper pyramid with minimal tools for you know, for the price of the materials of it, and you know, you can improvise from them, but I can give you all the dimensions, and it's really simple. You just need something to squish the end of the pipe. You need something to you know, a punch and a drill to make an accurate hole, and to bend the ends, and away you go. You can make these delightful little pyramids. You could put a bed underneath, and or you make a bigger one, you can get a few people to meditate under. You can jack them up in the air, like Nancy was saying, and make big circles. There's so many things you can do. And then you start incorporating other forms within it. So, for instance, you have your pyramid, and then underneath the pyramid you could have one of these aforementioned Merkaba. So you've got this nice little, you could dip it in, you could make it out of bronze and dip it in gold, you know, have it dipped in gold. And you could have this thing spinning around underneath it, or just hanging. And then you can have tuned crystals. Now, what you were saying before about using a spiral is a form of coil. And one of the things that I used to do was, and I still do actually, if you go to my website, everbeyond.info, you'll see an example of small varieties of this technology, where you take a crystal and you have three coils around it, and the center of the crystal has a pair of magnets attached to it. And what that does is it puts pressure on the crystal. Even, you know, it, although the magnets are pretty, you know, the strongest you can get, across like a half an inch of crystal or an inch thick crystal, it's not that much pressure anymore, but it's still an attraction, and it causes the crystal to be squeezed, and through the piezoelectric effect, it will generate an energetic signal. And because there's an oscillation in the magnetic field, it will create an oscillation. And the coil around it will then tune that oscillation, as you're saying. You can tune this energy by using coils. I also use a Fibonacci sequence relationship between two coils on the outside and one coil in the middle, so that the middle acts as a kind of transmitter, and then the ones on the outside acts as a kind of amplifier, like a transformer. So it transforms from, you know, it transmits from the center and beams out both ends. So, you know, you have essentially like a toroidal field that is pulsing out from the center of this coil. And, you know, if you hold the thing, and you hold the two magnets, and you're then applying your own physical pressure to the pressure of the magnets, you're modulating with the vibrations that are coming from the pressure that you're applying to your hand. You're modulating that field, so you're then projecting whatever you're modulating, or your intention, as it's expressing through your physical body, through your hand. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Two things. One, the Russian guy talking about the pyramids was talked about how the person themselves had to be of a specific frequency to be able to do the things that can be done in a pyramid. That the human being's frequency field itself was integral to the whole mechanism.
Well,
go ahead.
What I found was that actually doing the building, you know, doing the mathematics, doing the measurement, the carpentry, the cutting, the metalwork, and all of that stuff was character building. You know, I'm a better man for it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it raised my vibration just doing it. That's why I recommend doing it, because it engages parts of you that aren't often used, but are just the wisdom that you derive from engaging those parts of you is well worth the doing of that, even if you're just making cardboard ones. But you just make them out of more and more dense materials. If you can make one out of stone, what you're doing is you're creating an organite generator. You're creating an organ generator. That's what it is. It's chi. And it's structured in the double helix, because that's what the pyramid does. It's like making that form, having those angles in it, causes energy to vibrate. It's like it creates the phase angle of it. When a wave starts from zero, as it moves up, it could come up a very steep angle, or it come up a shallow angle. It'll make a nice curve, a nice round curve, or it'll make a huge curve that might get distorted. Oh, we got a call coming in. And so that is that influences the angle. So if you have a tight funnel or a relatively narrow funnel, like the bottle of a neck, for instance, that changes the way the water flows, and the angles of the pyramid change the way that the chi flows around it. Blah-de-blah-de-blah. I hope that was useful to someone. Area code 985. Hello.
Hey, how you doing? I'm loving your conversation. I just had a couple of things I wanted to throw in.
What's your name, sir?
I experimented with pyramids on my own. I was suffering from Morgellons, and Morgellons was eating me up. It was slowly killing me. I was not sleeping more than about an hour at a time, and I was losing weight, and my brain focus was gone. I couldn't think. I couldn't carry a thought in my head for more than about 10 seconds. I just couldn't concentrate, and something told me to build a pyramid. So I built an 8-foot square pyramid that I could sit inside of in my backyard. And I make signs, I make wooden signs, and I had recently done a subdivision, and I had 5 aluminum stop signs that were trash. And I had done some reading on organ generators. So I took an old cotton blanket and I layered an aluminum stop sign cotton blanket and made 5 layers of, you know, an organ generator, metal, organic, metal organic, and I took a big crystal and I epoxied it on each corner of the top stop sign, and I set that in the center of the pyramid. And that was a seat for me to sit on. So I would sit on this organ generator inside this pyramid. And the effects were amazing. It started clearing my head up, but at night I was still having a lot of trouble sleeping. So I made 9 small cardboard pyramids that would fit underneath my bed. And I joined the edges of them 3x3. And I put a big crystal inside of each one of those pyramids, slid that underneath my bed. Now, all of these pyramids are on magnetic north. And the first night I put that pyramid underneath my bed, I slept the whole night through without a disturbance from the Morgellons. And between meditating in that pyramid out in the yard a couple of times a day and sleeping over the pyramids under my bed, the Morgellons went into 100% remission. My brain works on a level that it has never worked on before. My memory is just phenomenal. My clarity is just unbelievable. And it changed me. It totally changed my life. Building a pyramid, sitting on an organ generator, and sleeping over pyramids.
There you go. It changes your life. It makes you a better
it
person.
It changed my life.
Sir, what's your name?
My name's Larry.
Larry.
I go by the Practical Madman.
Practical Madman.
Yep.
Or a sane in an insane world, yeah. So what do you think? Isn't it brilliant, Nancy?
It is absolutely brilliant. But one of the things that I started thinking about as you were describing that, Larry, is that when the cosmonauts were doing long space flights, they were coming back with their brains scrambled. And they figured, they finally realized that what was causing this problem was that when they were in the spacecraft, they were outside the electromagnetic field of the Earth. And our brains are used to, were built in a certain electromagnetic field, and that's what it's supposed to be to operate. Now they put artificial fields so that the cosmonauts and astronauts don't go through this. But at the time, it led the Russians into a field of study where they were building containers that were shielded from all electromagnetic fields of the Earth, and people would go inside of these things. And once they got inside of them, future, past, present time, all was simultaneous. What the Russians understood was that the bioelectromagnetic field of the human being, which is designed to work in the electromagnetic field of Earth, when you change that, you change the human configuration in their minds in relationship to place and space, which is the relationship of time. And that is confusing, but basically, without the electromagnetic field of Earth, we don't have a relationship, an understandable relationship between place and space and a feeling of time. We lose our ability to live in time that is 3D time. So these people inside these containers were having extraordinary paranormal experiences. But unlike the cosmonauts, the door opened and they walked out into the 3D environment, knowing that they had had an experience of paranormal versus being caught in a shell of a spacecraft and you don't know what the heck is happening. And
right.
They've done a huge amount of investigation into this particular question. So when you were inside the pyramid, and then when you put the pyramid underneath the bed, what you're doing, you're actually alternating, changing the bioelectromagnetic fields that you were existing in. And because the bioelectromagnetic fields of pyramidic energy are pulling up, are fueled by the fields that Earth is putting out. In other words, if you took a pyramid and you stuck it in the middle of a vacuum, I don't know that it would have any effect. It has to have something feeding it. And in this case, it's the Earth's own field. So the Earth's field being attacked on all sorts of ways, from the cell phones to the refrigerator, all of this attack on your electromagnetic fields is what made you sick. So
yeah.
When you...
And
when
the
you
more gallons, I'm not sure where it came from. I think it came from the chemtrails, but it was definitely changing the magnetics of my body.
Yes, you know, what is your body when it's sick? It's diseased. You're out of balance electromagnetically. So that's the thing that they're finding with pyramids. And I honor you. I mean, I use Orgone generators. And, you know, that's a masterful stroke that you did there, because again, using the Orgone generators, you are amplifying the entire effect. But the effect,
right,
the energies that you were put now subjecting yourself through. See, if you can heal the physical body, if you don't heal the electromagnetic body, the etheric, which is the energy body just above us, if you don't heal those bodies, then the physical body is going to just deteriorate again. So
right,
if you heal at the electromagnetic area, if you're really worrying on that level, the physical body will simply become okay. It wants to be in a state of balance. And
I'm not sure where the ideas came from.
Your higher
self. My higher self
probably
told me what to do. That the ideas just popped into my head. You know, I've always been looking on the internet for the last 8 years. I've been watching everything I could watch, just, you know, for general knowledge. And some kind of way, everything just came together, and I decided I need an orgone generator inside of a pyramid. And I haven't been able to get anybody else to sit in that thing. Everybody else is afraid of it. None of my friends, my wife, nobody will sit in it. But if you sit in it for 15 minutes and just still your mind, you step out of it a new person. It just does amazing things, but everybody I know is afraid to sit in it. Nobody will sit in it.
But it's tuned to you. You built it. It's tuned to you.
That's
it
true.
Might, you know, they may be feeling, they may be feeling that that's not their energy, and they don't know. I mean, they're telling you no, but they may not know why. And it may be because their higher self is saying, no, that's not your energy. Now, one
right.
of the ways that I learned to change the energy of pyramids was by taking different minerals like amethyst, quartz, or, you know, I liked points, but you didn't need points, and you would just tie them to the end of the base of the pyramid. So that each leg is now got a different frequency coming up it. And
right.
what I would try, try an experiment, is I'm assuming that you probably are into crystals and minerals, yes or no?
Yeah, I play with crystals, and I take liquid minerals every day. I've been taking minerals for 20 years.
Okay, but take your crystals and, you know, the person that you think might play along with you, and just say to them, okay, I know you don't want to go in here, but I think it's because it's not your energy, and just let's play a game here. And just have them pick out any, I'm assuming it's four, you got four poles on the pyramid?
Yeah.
Four? Yeah. Okay, so have them pick out four of your crystals. And then you just go and put those crystals on the legs. And then, you know, let it sit there for a couple minutes, and then ask them again, would you be interested in going in now? And leave it up to them.
Right.
Because if they decide to go into it, then you know what was wrong. Why they
right.
wouldn't. And now we've all learned something more.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah,
I've got
a little bottle full of crystals.
Yeah, and all you have to do is take, I used to take like a resin, like a thread. You string, and you just wrap it around there until it's nice and snug, you know, so it's not going to go anyplace. And what happens is that the copper will kind of the energy will pull up out of the copper. Once the pyramid starts to move again, it'll because every time you touch it, it's going to change. But it'll just put up this different energy that this person has said, no, that's the energy that I would like to feel. And it may still scare them. They may not go in there, but at least give it a try, because it might just be a fact that it's tuned to you and they don't feel comfortable with it.
Right.
But that's fascinating.
I don't have any kind of instruments or anything, but a magnetic compass, if you go anywhere near the pyramid, that magnetic compass starts going all kinds of different ways. It gets all confused. It just goes wild when you're within 2 or 3 feet of the pyramid. It just won't work.
Yeah.
Well, basically, you've got an orgone flow that is coming out from that array in the middle with the copper coil and the stop signs and everything like that. You know, that's drawing in a lot of. What you've got is basically a huge piece of orgonite, which is indeed
right.
what we were talking about earlier. The Great Pyramid is exactly that. It's made of aggregate material with this generator that sits in the middle of it, the fire in the middle,
right.
pyramid in the middle, which we were talking before was the Ark of the Covenant, which is the spark from the interdimensional traveling spark. So, 231. Hello, 231.
JP, thank you for taking my call.
Who's this?
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry. Who's this speaking?
Thank you. Oh, JP, thank you for taking my call. This is Wally from Frigid, Michigan.
Wally. Hello, Wally. This has got Larry and we got Wally. That's great. I love these little... Anyway, so what's your experience, Wally?
Well, I really don't have an experience, but you were talking about getting in touch with you. I'm suffering cataracts right now. I've got one eye that's like wax paper. The other one is kind of like a little cloudy. And listening to Larry talking about his pyramid, and I'm trying to get my body is unbalanced with these cataracts. And I'm trying to figure out how to balance listening, talking about the pyramids and the orange generator?
The Oregon generator, Oregon. Which is chi.
Oregon
it's generator. The same as what kung fu people use and everything like that.
But my question is what do I build a pyramid out of? What type of metal, or doesn't it have to be made out of metal?
You can use a lot of different things. And I would start with what sort of skill level are you at?
A skill level as I'm pretty creative. I mean, I'm pretty skillful.
So you could for instance you could build it out of pipe cleaners, you could build it out of drinking straws, you could build it out of bamboo rods, you could build it out of 2x4s, you could build it out of copper tubing. Household copper tubing. You could build it out of steel scaffolding. You could weld it together using an arc welding machine. You could use oxyacetylene to weld bronze rods together. That's what I'm saying. What sort of skill level you are will determine. You could cut stone and make one out of stone. You could shutter and create a wooden form that you could then pour concrete aggregate into, which contains crystals and pieces of metal, and make an enormous concrete organite. there is no limit. You can go from, as I say, you can go from copper wire to stone or concrete. That everything will make a pyramid.
Wally, if you go over to JP's website and you take a look at the directions that he gives you there, use it as a guide, but listen to yourself, because every pyramid needs to be tuned to not only the earth by the structure, but also by the intention and the energy of the person building it. So it's better to ask your guides, okay, what do you want me to build this out of? Because they know you better than you know you, and certainly that we could ever advise you. So if you just learn the basis of what you have to, okay, I need pieces this size and whatever, and you get the structure, how you have to do it, then just go with it. Follow your own instincts. That's what I tell you to do.
Okay, well, it's all kind of new to me, but I don't have JP's website.
It's everbeyond.info. everbeyond.info. And you can go there. There's all sorts of information, and there's stuff about, I've been doing this radio thing for quite a few years, so I've got lots of archives going back till 2010. And I've got a lot of stuff talking about pyramids and about crystals and about orgonite and orgon and the seven rays and all these sort of cool esoteric things that only now people are becoming interested in. So thank you, Wally. And whereabouts are you, Wally?
I'm Michigan. Would you give me your website again and a little bit slower? My eyesight's bad. I'm trying to write it down.
I will speak for the slow, because I know sometimes the sound comes through slowly. It's
everbeyond,
as in beyond the hill over there.
Beyond.
Yeah.
.com.
.info. very soon, when people send me some donations, I'll buy a domain which will be Ever Beyond Radio, so it'll be easier to do, and it'll be .com. But until somebody, because I haven't got any money. Anyway, in Michigan, these things they generate basically the kind of automatic machines, because of the pressure of the weight is what activates the crystals. The compression of a crystal by piezoelectric. It's proven by science. You use it every day when you have a cigarette lighter that does that. You know, it's a generation of a spark, which is the arc, and we have a spark inside our bodies. The whole thing about, I've been talking to quite a lot of people about this idea that health is actually an electrical issue. That our cells actually just need electricity. They don't need food. So if we had sufficient body electricity, we wouldn't need to eat things except to, have fun together and enjoy things. But there seems to be a growing body of evidence and a growing evidence that that's the way we'll be in the future. We won't need to eat food. And so food storage might be a bit of a kind of side question in the future. This is an interesting thought. But until then, lettuce is really good.
Thank you.
So your cataracts will be probably a lot of the result of your environment and what you've put inside your body. That can be, what's the word? They call it chelation. Everything's toxic that we've been exposed to, and we can remove those toxins through sound, through light, and through other means, vibrational therapy, vibrational medicine. So instead of taking a homeopathic, you have a color that comes up on your TV screen or your computer screen, and you just sit there for a few minutes every day watching that color, and you're making yourself better.
I've been taking these pills, natural pills, because I really don't want to have surgery. I don't want to have them cut out. And I've been taking naturals. A very good doctor down in Florida has I get the pills from him down there, Dr. David Klein. And they're just, he said it'll be about 6 months, and I'm 4 months into them. And I haven't noticed anything yet. I've quit smoking. I don't do drugs. I don't drink alcohol. I basically don't do much of anything, so I don't know where they came from, and, they're not old people cataracts, so I was told at the eye doctor that it was from steroids, but I never took steroids other than, medicine that had steroid in it, 25 years ago, but I'm just looking at any way I can do it naturally. I come from a drug dealing family. My family is pharmacists and detail men for pharmaceuticals, and I refuse to take any of that garbage. I mean, it is. It's all garbage.
It's chemical waste that is foisted on us.
One other thing I wanted to say is...
What's your relationship with wheat and sugar?
With what?
Wheat.
I do sugar because I drink Kool-Aid, but I probably should drop off from the Kool-Aid, huh?
That'll be it. Is it diet Kool-Aid by any chance?
I kind of thought sugar might be part of it too.
Yeah, I mean, there's various levels of poison at the soda level. I mean, sugar being the food for candida, which a lot of people are having to carry these days, and that's what causes the sugar cravings, is not you. You're not a bad person. It's just that you've got this being inside you that is causing you to crave things, and that's the candida, which is like a yeast, and like yeast, it eats sugar and produces alcohol, but candida also produces other poisons. And if things weren't bad enough with the sugar, and presumably that there's a lot of people that are saying that cancer and candida have a very similar thing. So the trick is to eat more like lettuce and greens and cucumbers and nice green colored food. You know, the green color is important because it's vibrating at that level, and your stomach will thank you for it. Eat more lettuce.
Well, thank you.
You know, because you got to think about your environment is what's causing your issue. So if I was a car and somebody was putting sand in my oil, I wouldn't run very well, would I?
No, you would not.
Yeah.
You are. That's the same thing that Dr. Klein says. It's in your environment. And I'm slowly eliminating everything out of my environment to see, you know, what it is. And, you know, sugar has played a part. And I don't drink a lot of it. I might have maybe 3 glasses of it in a day, maybe. So I don't.
Here's the thing.
I don't eat candy either. I don't do any candy.
Do you do meat?
Hamburger.
Mm-hmm. So you're eating in the white bread of the hamburger bun. Is probably the biggest killer of all. And many, many, many people suffer from, like, all these weird things because of the stuff in the white bun, the gluten. And it gives you, because that's what the yeast feeds on most of all. That's what it loves most of all, you know, a bit of flour and a bit of sugar. And it creates a brewery in your body. And it poisons you, and you feel terrible, and it's not like being nicely drunk. It's poisoned.
Toxic. Wally, we used to go out every day for hamburgers, you know, so they'd send somebody out. And I started to take and put, like, vegetables in the diet. I didn't take out the hamburgers or the french fries. But I started eating, adding things, tomatoes and lettuce, and started bringing in this. And what happened to my body was it got to the point where it was wanting the vegetables and not the hamburger. The first thing to go was the french fries. All of a sudden, one day I said, I don't want to eat these things. And then the next thing to go was the hamburger. But it wasn't because I was trying to substitute. I was just trying to add good stuff. And your body is an amazing machine. And as soon as you start just trying to eat better stuff, your body's going to say, no, I want that stuff. It comes down to everything that you take into your body needs to vibrate at an energy that is usable by your body. And these processed foods just aren't. You've got to be able to grow. If there's any way possible to start buying fresh from the local farmer. Because another thing that they discovered in the Soviet or the Russians, they discovered that food that is grown in your local area has got the same bioelectromagnetic field that you need that works best with you. So you should always be buying, you know, locally when possible, because you need to change your energy field.
Well, I have 18 goji berry plants. And I should be getting goji berries out of there. 2 years old, and I should be getting goji berries this year. And I live here on a river, and I'm going to be growing my own vegetables this year and also selling them, growing them, you know, as organic as I can. I'm going to stay chemical-free because there's no place on the earth you can go organic unless you do it in the biosphere. So, you know, we're inundated. I've got snow piles in front of my house that are 4 feet taller than I am, and I'm 6 feet tall. We have just been here in Michigan, we've just been inundated with snow, so, you know, this spring, I'm just looking to see how I can detox my body now in the wintertime, which is difficult.
The other thing is, there are two specific frequencies of light that you can get LEDs with. Right. 415 nanometers, 660 nanometers. Look this up in the archive. Send me an email. Everbeyond.info, people, as there's stuff there about pyramids. Nancy Hopkins, thank you very much. Thank you, Wally. Thank you, Larry. And good night, everybody. This has been Journeys.
Thanks so much. Thank you, listeners.
You're very welcome. Good night, everybody. Mm-hmm.
Nice.